Hello, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the American Lung Association. Welcome to Lungcast. Have you gotten your shot yet? An uncomplicated healthcare question that today has many different implications. With that question, your mind most likely goes to the COVID-19 vaccines or even the now available boosters. After all, 7-day averages of new daily COVID cases remain above 100,000 in the United States, especially as the Omicron variant and stilted vaccine rates remind us this pandemic is not yet over. But it was only a year ago that the preeminent meeting of, quote, getting your shot, end quote, was for the flu. Even if it feels the days when seasonal influenza was a prominent concern in respiratory health was a lifetime ago. Rather, following a dulled 2020-21 flu season, when pandemic-based masking and distancing kept cases to a decade low, we're now living out a scenario where a, quote, twindemic, end quote, seems more possible than ever. In the week ending December 4th, confirmed U.S. flu cases for the 2021-22 season were nearing 3,000, with early indications that flu activity is increasing while administered vaccines are down from last year. We are no longer being afforded incidental protection from influenza while fighting COVID-19. In a less masked, less distanced population, both are able to spread greatly this season. And today's episode addresses the need for precautions. Dr. Agarwal, Chief Health Officer of Anthem Incorporated, joins us on behalf of the philanthropic arm of the company, Anthem Foundation, which is working collaboratively with the American Lung Association to inform everyone how to best keep themselves and others healthy this flu season through a campaign called Fend Off Flu. We hope you take away some valuable insights on the dangers of the flu and the means to keep yourself and others protected this season in this newest episode of Lungcast. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Agarwal. For too many months now, the COVID-19 pandemic and the discussion around vaccines has dominated the news cycle, and rightly so. However, as we're airing this Lungcast episode to make sure we discuss the other important respiratory pathogens that we've been dealing with over the many years and how the development of therapies, including vaccines, has changed the outlook of these diseases, we thought it was important to have this podcast today. We know, just like with COVID-19, the vaccines don't help if people don't use them. So among the important vaccines at this time of year is influenza. We've already seen that influenza rates were significantly decreased during the COVID pandemic, probably related to the mitigation efforts used to stop the spread of SARS-CoV-2 virus. Do you have some thoughts on how this flu season this year will look, and how can you clarify if the process for determining the strains of influenza utilized and ultimately the effectiveness of those vaccines will be impacted by the low rates of influenza we've seen in the Southern Hemisphere the last year and a half to 2 years?
Yeah, thank you for that. So first, it's great to be here, Dr. Rizzo, to join you on this podcast, and thank you for the opportunity. I also really appreciate the partnership that we have between Anthem and the American Lung Association. So, you know, I think, as you pointed out right at the outset, flu is going to be, I think, quite important this year. And we are in this situation where, we need to address both flu and COVID-19 in the coming months. Now, we know from last year that the flu rates were actually not that high. Prevalence was quite low last year, probably owing to a lot of the masking and social distancing and other precautions that we had all engaged in. That picture has now changed. And we have seen in the last couple of weeks, especially, an uptick in flu cases, in influenza-like symptoms going to the ER, even admissions. So there's some early indicators that we may be heading to much more of a usual flu season this year. It's hard to be extremely confident about what the prevalence will be like this year, but it's certainly there's again these early indicators that it's going to be quite different from last year. To your question, we have been, the flu season is tracked in the Southern Hemisphere to give us some insight about what it will look like here, and it also is tracked in order to be able to assess viral mutations and help in the development of a vaccine. You know, we know, you know, obviously no vaccine is 100%. Flu efficacy rates for vaccination have varied over the last few years. I think some of the highest rates have approached about 60% effectiveness. We do know that the majority of flu that we see in the U.S. is caused by influenza A, specifically H3N2. And so, you know, we will go out, as I know you will, with our usual messaging around how to take reasonable precautions against flu, like hand washing, particularly focused on those extremes of age, the particularly young and the particularly old, because they are at risk. You know, we will do our best educating and outreach. And in particular this year, which I know we'll get into more, try to balance that outreach with further education and outreach about COVID-19.
Right. Yeah, there's no question that each year we strive to get more and more people to get the influenza vaccine. And I'm not sure, I'm hoping that the COVID situation will prompt more people to do that as well. With regard to those influenza vaccines, can you speak to the differences between the influenza vaccines that are currently available, and then maybe touch on how they're different from the mRNA technology that's been used in several of the COVID vaccines? I think the more information people have about the background, it can sometimes help get rid of some myths and misinformation.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I will be honest with you, I have to remind myself every year about these vaccines and how they're produced.
It's
something that goes in and out of the brain pretty quickly. So it's no surprise that it's hard for most people to understand. So look, the two technologies, the mRNA technology that we are now all pretty familiar with for COVID-19 and the flu technologies are pretty different. On the flu side, there's really three ways of producing a flu vaccine that are most commonly used. First are egg-based vaccines. They've been in use for the longest, I think well over 70 years at this point. Typically what happens is the candidate vaccine virus is grown in chicken eggs per FDA requirements. And then the fluid containing the virus is harvested, inactivated, and purified. And that is why, you know, this comes with the caution around not using it for folks that have egg allergies because of how they are developed. For the nasal spray vaccines, there's actually a weakened virus and a slightly different production process is used, but those can still be egg-based. So that's important to keep in mind. A second approach is the cell-based vaccine production, which doesn't require the use of a chicken egg, so doesn't come with the same caution around egg allergies. And here in this process, you actually grow the vaccine in animal cells. The cell-based technology actually has the potential to grow the vaccine more quickly. The virus can be harvested more quickly. And so that's actually wonderful because it shortens the duration of when we identify the specific viruses we want to develop a vaccine for and then when the vaccine can be available. This year, specifically the 21-22 influenza season, all four of the flu vaccines that are commonly in use are actually cell-derived. And so this year it will be egg-free. And then the final technology is recombinant flu vaccines, which don't actually even need a candidate vaccine virus sample in order to produce them. This is a purely, totally synthetic process, and it's actually the fastest of the three. So again, it shortens that duration of time from knowing which what the particular strain will be to how we can actually get it into use. There's only one process that's currently approved for use in the United States by the FDA. Only one vaccine that's been approved by the FDA in the U.S., and this one is obviously totally synthetic, so totally egg-free as well. Now, regardless of which process you use for the flu, all of them are vastly differ from the mRNA technology. And the main difference, of course, is that the flu vaccines, and indeed every vaccine we've developed until the mRNA ones, actually present the antigen to the body, right? So the whole reason for getting the vaccine is to have that kind of antigen presented to the immune system so that we can develop an immune response. mRNA differs because you're really injecting the mRNA into the cell, which causes the production of the antigen and then the immune response. So biologically, they differ a fair amount. And we saw in particular, of course, with COVID-19, how extremely quick the mRNA production process was, though. And this is something I tell our members and others all the time. the vaccine didn't just get developed in a year. The vaccine got developed over several years, you know, even a couple of decades. And so it didn't just appear overnight, but certainly the production process is so fast that it can almost give you that impression.
Great explanation. And with all the different options in that science, there's really no excuse for anybody over 6 months old who's recommended to get the flu to not get the flu. So giving them a lot of options. Other thing I wanted you to touch on, if you could, the elderly are recommended to get the high dose. How important is that and why are they particularly recommended to get that?
Yeah, so it is really critical that they get the high dose vaccine. And it's because we know that in the elderly in particular, their immune response to vaccination tends to be lower than younger population. So we want to expose them to a higher level of the antigen so that we really generate the immune response that will ultimately be most beneficial to them. You know, that's not so different from what we're seeing with COVID-19, right? The elderly were, of course, prioritized early for vaccination and prioritized early for boosting for, I think, much the same reason that we want to elicit that really robust immune response so that they truly are as immune as possible to these viruses. And I think that element of the messaging is really critical as we work together to reach out to our patients and our members to make sure that the elderly are educated about the high dose vaccination.
Right. And this is the, a second full flu season that's had COVID in the background or foreground, as the case may be. Can you talk a little bit about the situation with individuals possibly getting infected by both COVID-19 virus and influenza? And those two infections can often present very similarly. And how are we going to, as physicians and as patients, how do we know where to go and why it's so important to try to make a specific diagnosis?
Yeah, look, this, I think, could be a quite challenging year. And I think we in healthcare, frontline clinicians especially, have to be particularly prepared for what's about to happen. As I mentioned, you know, we are seeing some early data that suggests that our flu season might look much more typical with as prior years and really not resemble what we saw last year. So they do, you know, both COVID-19 and flu, as we know, do present with many common symptoms. There are some differences like, you know, sort of loss of smell and taste that we saw with COVID-19, but they're really not discriminating from a diagnostic standpoint. You know, you're not, those are not going to be the things that kind of clinch it for an ER doc. What's important is testing for each. And we do at this point have really great tests, both antigen and PCR for both viruses. I'm even aware there is a new test being developed that actually includes both flu and COVID-19. So I'm not sure exactly when it will hit the market. But the importance is, of course, testing for each. If you see influenza-like symptoms, you've got to, as the bedside clinician, really implement both a flu and a COVID test. And again, you know, this is where our working together, you know, particularly in the Fend Off Flu campaign, is going to be really critical. We have to, I mean, we've already undertaken the very difficult task over the last couple of years of educating the public around COVID-19. This year, we have to be up to the task of educating them about both the flu and COVID-19, about getting the vaccine, about getting the boosters, as the case may be, and being aware, that both can occur and we need to think about both at the same time.
And another thing I'm certainly stressing to our patients and from the Lung Association standpoint is the importance of finding out the diagnosis early because, both influenza as well as COVID-19 do have some interventions, antivirals and monoclonal antibodies for COVID-19 that can really slow down or lessen the severity of the COVID disease. Can you touch on the influenza treatments and also the COVID treatments if you could?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we all know there's really important supportive treatments that we can provide very early on, right? Especially when patients present, whether it's outpatient or ER, wherever they're going. Critically, there are some great antivirals for both viruses at this point. Let me touch on them in a little bit of detail. So antivirals for flu have now long been approved and used. Your point is exactly right, which is that we have to diagnose them very early because these antivirals, unlike antibiotics, and I know the clinicians listening certainly know the difference, but antivirals are most effective early in disease, in symptom progression. So very important to diagnose early and where appropriate to use the antiviral early. And that's definitely true of flu today. With COVID-19, we do have the monoclonal antibody treatments, again, extremely critical to try to keep people from developing more severe disease, certainly getting hospitalized if we can avoid it. There are now two antivirals that are going through the FDA process, one by Merck, the other by Pfizer, that really in clinical trials appear to have very positive results. We'll see. I don't believe at this point they have gotten EUA approval, but they are seeking that. And if approved under the EUA umbrella, then those could be, you know, some potentially really great treatments as well. Again, emphasizing early COVID-19 diagnosis, making sure that we're looking for both illnesses and then using the antiviral that's most appropriate. And on the COVID-19 side, of course, assuming, you know, they're approved.
Right. And just touching on what you mentioned about the diagnostic tests, I too have heard about the ones that combine COVID-19 as well as influenza. And I believe RSV is now being included in some of those
right.
as well, which right now is taking a back seat in some ways, but we know is still an important pathogen for, especially for individuals with chronic lung disease.
Absolutely.
Some common questions right now around COVID and influenza are whether or not the vaccines or boosters for COVID-19 could be given at the same time as the influenza vaccine. Your thoughts
That's
on
right.
that?
That's right. So people may recall from a few months ago when there was a recommendation that these vaccines be spaced. The CDC has since eliminated that recommendation. They can actually be given at the same time, whether it's the booster, the initial COVID-19 vaccination course, and the flu. My only recommendation around that is do it in each arm because, we all know, I think the COVID-19 shots in particular do tend to lead to some kind of local pain there. Aside from that, you can certainly get it at the same time.
Another question that often is asked is, Should I get my flu vaccine if I'm currently suspected of having COVID-19? What are your thoughts
right.
on that?
Yeah, so there the recommendation is pretty clear to wait until you are no longer sick from COVID-19, you no longer have symptoms. And I believe the latest recommendations are still to test negative for COVID-19 and then at that point to get the flu shot. So worth waiting. And in part, I think that's because you have an immune process going on. We want to make sure that when you get the flu shot that, you know, you really can have a robust immune response to it. But also there is this issue of not wanting to go to a public setting to get the vaccine for either vaccine if you're already currently sick. So best to isolate, get better, and then get the vaccine.
Right. And I guess the other question was, if you truly have a confirmed case, how long do you wait until you go get the vaccine? I think you pretty much have answered that as well. You want to get your symptoms under control before
right.
you get the influenza vaccine. Okay. You've touched on it a little bit, but you know, each year the CDC runs educational campaigns about the importance of influenza vaccination, and the American Lung Association does as well. And this year we're really happy to have partnered with Anthem to amplify that message. Can you speak a little bit more about what Anthem's been doing around flu and the Fend Off Flu campaign you just mentioned earlier? It is a great partnership, and we look forward to doing more great things with you.
Yeah, thank you. No, the partnership is really critical to us. I think developing educational materials and really having a campaign, getting on social media, really trying to reach out to our patients and members is really critical. You know, frankly, we do this every year. It's a priority for our enterprise to get this messaging out, make people aware that flu is still very much around. You know, it's still a very devastating infectious illness, you know, and we often lose it in the background. I think it's important to highlight, especially now, because of all the attention that COVID-19 has rightly gotten. People can forget there are other important illnesses like flu, like RSV, as you pointed out earlier. So our approach is we do utilize a host of different avenues. We use our social media. We have our own employees, you know, call members, particularly those that are at risk, the elderly, the socially vulnerable, and try to make resources available to them. We have incentive programs to get the flu shot, to get the COVID-19 shot as well. It's really about optimizing as much reach as we can and getting in front of the members that we know are particularly at risk to make sure that they're aware of the data We try to connect them to providers. We give providers to more information so that they can reach out to their patients as well.
I think that's a great message to kind of bring our discussion to a close. I want to thank you again for taking the time today. And we look forward to a successful influenza campaign.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate the collaboration. And I know we'll have some impact together.
Great.
Thanks again to Dr. Agrawal for his timely influenza insights and to the Anthem Foundation team for their work with us in guiding community protection. You can find resources from the Fend Off Flu campaign at lung.org/fend-off-flu. If you enjoyed this interview, check out other respiratory infection episodes like our vaccination roundtable with Drs. Michael Greenberg and Richard Nettles, and our March discussion on the history of tuberculosis. For additional news and insights into respiratory health, be sure to visit us at hcplive.com and lung.org. Until next month, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters, so just take it one breath at a time.